Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon with Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated in Hoosick Falls, New York. This is something of a radio class if you want to learn about all things automotive. Very informative show. And, of course, Gordon is here to help solve your problems. He's pretty good at it, too. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us if you wish at WAMC Vox Pop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on Facebook. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. We have a show page on our website, WAMC.org/Vox Pop. You can comment there. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or better yet, call. It's 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. Good to be here.
Well, everyone's driving now. This is the automotive season, if you will, and I imagine it's fairly busy at the old shop, eh?
Yeah, there's a lot of broken cars here this month or so.
More than usual for this time of year?
It seems like it, and it's big stuff. We're seeing steering racks. We're seeing wheel bearings, a lot of brakes, transmissions, you know, big, heavy, hard, long-term jobs.
So is this emblematic of a car industry that is now putting out subpar products and now it's all, we're paying the piper?
You know, I don't know, because each year cars seem to last longer and longer. We used to see odometers at 60, 80, 90,000 miles and cars were really getting beat up. Now they're going well over 100,000 miles, 170, 180. I had a car in the other day. It was a Honda Accord, 198,000 miles.
Oh, that's great.
Car going strong. Yeah. So cars are lasting longer, it seems.
So I guess if you get to that age, you will have a catastrophic injury of some kind.
Anything mechanical is going to wear out sooner or later. So if you keep it long enough, things are going to break no matter what it is.
So that's why you always get a new car, right?
Well, at some point you have to, or newer.
That's the way I roll.
Yeah.
Newer or less old. Ann in Albany. Ann, you're first.
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you. Gordon, I have a 2003 PT Cruiser. It's got around 40,000 miles on it. Doesn't get driven all that much. And I have it serviced at one of the chains. And whenever I take it in recently a couple times, and I mentioned changing the fuel filter, they talk like, oh, well, maybe it doesn't have one, and nothing ever really happens with a fuel filter. So I'm wondering, does it have a fuel filter?
Yes, it does. And a lot of vehicles now have the fuel filter incorporated in the fuel pump, which is inside the gas tank. And the fuel filter has a pretty good surface area, so you'd consider it to be a pretty big filter.
Yeah.
And they virtually are non-serviceable because they last so long. It seems that gasoline has gotten much nicer and cleaner, and we aren't replacing fuel filters like we used to. Less contamination, and they claim that a lot of those are lifetime fuel filters, and for the most part, that seems to be true.
Okay, I used to have a fellow, he'd replace the fuel filter every time I got it tuned up on a much older car.
Yeah, that was the norm that many years ago. And those fuel filters in the early days, and if you even go back to carbureted engines, those fuel filters were very, very small, so it didn't take much to plug them. Now they're four times as big, so potentially four times as long-lasting.
Hmm.
Sounds like one less thing to worry about.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Suzanne in Dutchess County. Hi, Suzanne. You're on.
Hi. We have a problem with the check engine light. This van is 10 years old, has about 60,000 miles on it. It's a Ford 150 basic cargo van. And obviously doesn't get much use, but we have had a continuous problem over the 10 years. And all sorts of things get fixed and replaced, and eventually it passes inspection and so forth. Well, I finally got it diagnosed by someone who said, for a lot of money, they said, do not replace any more of these little parts. You need the computer, it's like a PC processor. And you have to get it from Ford, and he was not eager to send me to Ford, but he said, you have to get it from Ford because they've got the proprietary software for this part. And once you get the part, they have to you know, redo it. And it's not something you can get used. And when I spoke to the guy at the Ford parts place, he said, once you buy this, it's yours. You walk across the room, we won't take it back. and the guy at two other stations said to me, oh, that's crazy, lady. I've been doing this for years. We can fix it for you. We'll get rid of the light. So, you know, really. I mean, yeah. I'm tired of this.
Yeah. I'll tell you and a lot of other people, because check engine lights are very, very rampant. We have them probably every day almost. And some causes are fairly simple and less costly to repair. Others are really hair pullers. Not knowing what the particular code is on your van now or if it's having any symptoms.
Yeah, 1 to 10, 10, 20, is there something like that? I don't know. I just got, when I got the oil change the other day, hoping that it would magically go away.
Yeah.
I came up with two codes, but according to the guy who spent a lot of time diagnosing it, and he said the codes don't mean anything in this case because the computer part, you know, the program thing is broken. It's burnt, like, and
yeah,
doesn't tell the truth.
It's the PCM, and different car makers call them different things, but PCM, Ford calls it a processor. Some call it ECM, which is electronic control module. Nowadays, they seldom fail. They are so well made. It's almost always outside causes, sensors, poor connections, wiring issues, things happening outside of the computer. So I'm not saying that they do not fail and do not get replaced, but it's not that common. So it might be good to get a second opinion and see if your situation can't be resolved without having to replace the computer, because the last thing you want to do is get the computer replaced. They reset the light, and you drive the car 2 days, and the light's back
yeah.
on.
That's what I'm thinking.
And unfortunately, we run into this a lot. The true test, if the computer is happy and all systems are go, is for the car to be put back into normal service, because the computer then does all of its own self-testing. And it's testing all the time. Anytime the car's running, it's running these self-tests. And when they all pass, the light doesn't come on, the computer's happy. So you'd hate to have to go through that. So I think I'd go see if that can be remedied without just arbitrarily replacing the computer and see how you make out.
How much more would I have to spend in labor to get this, what you're suggesting?
Well, I see, not having any idea what codes you are having or what's wrong, I couldn't answer that. But if the vehicle is not having any running problems.
No, it had a fuel pump a few years ago, and it got rid of the problem that it had from, it used to choke from the time we bought it. Occasionally, we never could understand or explain it. And once somebody replaced the fuel pump, and it ran fine after that.
Yeah, I think I would investigate taking it somewhere else and just see what they come up with.
Okay. Suzanne, thanks a lot for the call. Is it true that the software is proprietary?
Well, it's not that it's proprietary, but on newer vehicles, if you replace a major component like the PCM
right.
or even other modules in the vehicle, the transmission module, even the dashboard module, the instrument cluster.
Yeah.
The vehicles oftentimes require reprogramming, and a lot of times that has to be done with the factory equipment. So that's what she's...
You'd think in these days of computer hacking and software geniuses in every, you know, in every residential home in suburbia
yes.
and elsewhere, that there would be some people who could say, oh, I can program this for you.
I think you're right, Ray. And the funny thing you mentioned is what I have understood recently is that there's hackers out there that can plug into your vehicles and change the mileage.
Oh, that's not good.
You know, there was a time when people rolled speedometers back. They were mechanical
yeah.
devices. Now that they're electronic, they were almost foolproof. And now I'm hearing that there's guys that are going in there and hacking into the computers and changing mileages on vehicles.
That would be unethical.
Yeah.
That's not good. All right, let's go to Ray in Shutesbury. Ray, you're up.
Hi. I like to work on family vehicles. I used to work at a gas station when I was a kid and stuff. But I had a clutch put into my daughter's 03 Honda CR-V recently at the dealer. And I just found out that after they did the clutch and all that, they told me that the U-joint in the back of the drive shaft for the all-wheel drive was gone, and that The whole drive shaft, apparently all the U-joints, once I looked, I saw what he was talking about. They're all pressed in, unlike other U-joints. And so to replace you can't just replace the U-joint. You got to replace the whole drive shaft, including the center support.
Yep.
And, of course, that's a $700 dealer part. But after doing some internet research, I saw that, of course, somebody makes aftermarket U-joints, but you do have to take the whole drive shaft off center support. And there are YouTube videos on how to knock out those pressed-in U-joints and replace them. What do you think? Have you run into that?
Yeah. Those are called staked U-joints.
And
they do get pressed together, then they stake them, and that's a method where they bash the metal over. Instead of having retaining clips,
they just
stake them over so they can't come apart.
Right.
Obviously, that drive shaft was built somewhere in many pieces and put together. So the problem is finding anybody that makes the U-joints or sells them to go in there and change them. And it's very, very labor-intensive, so it would reach a point, at least for a repair shop, that it would be more effective to replace the unit than to spend all the time taking it apart. I've run into this with a lot of different vehicles, Volvos, BMWs, Subarus. You can't buy any of those components, but there are some nice companies out there now that are rebuilding these and or supplying new ones at a substantial...
I noticed that for about half the price, right?
Yeah, and they're
good. Well, I was going to tackle U-joint myself, you know, because I've done plenty of U-joints on every other American vehicle. But, you know, so I didn't think I'd have a problem. And a replacement U-joint that does come off, that has the caps and the clips that will go into that drive shaft, the OE drive shaft, you know, they're the normal price of a U-joint,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
$20, $30. But I don't know if there's balancing involved or if I should bother.
That U-joint needs to be perfectly installed. If it's a little bit crooked, you'll get a wobble or a shake. It's a very intricate piece of machinery, actually, that drive shaft.
Ray, thanks a lot for the call. We have to take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here. It is Automotive Day on Vox Pop. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Henyon Bakery Amherst, since 1993 offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Smith College Museum of Art presenting The Eye is a Door, landscape photographs by Anne Whiston Spurn, now on view, exhibition-related programs, and more. smith.edu/artmuseum for details. Edward Garbosik, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. And Rensselaer County Historical Society, presenting Horden History, an exhibition exploring why the museum collects, cares for, and uses collections. Thursdays through Saturdays, noon to 5, rchsonline.org.
one 800 348 2551 is our number. It is Vox Pop. Always great to have Gordon Fricke here. I'm Ray Graff. Back to the phones we go. Bernadette in New Paltz. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi. I have a Mazda 2002 MPV. It's a van. And the heater core in the back went bad. It started leaking antifreeze. So last year I had a mechanic, instead of replacing it or fixing it because it costs a fortune, He put a bypass in the front on the firewall, and also antifreeze started leaking out of the car after the last oil change. I'm using antifreeze for some reason. So I put like a stop leak in it, and so I'm assuming that it clogged up the front heater core. They told me to do a reverse flush in the front, but I've been having this problem in the car when it gets cold. As soon as it gets below like around 40 degrees, the whole inside of the car gets all fogged up to the point where sometimes in the winter you get like a frost in the windshield. I'll get out of the car and walk into a store and come back an hour later and my car's all fogged up. And I'm wondering if that has to do with the heater cores, if they're not evaporating the moisture or... And I've had accidents with the cars, too, with, like, shopping carts and stuff. And there's moisture in the frame of the car. I mean, it's like a nightmare. where there used to be, like, a big well of water underneath the car. It sounded like you were driving around in a boat. And I'd have to try to drain that out. And I'm wondering if maybe the frame of the car might have broke a seal when it got hit by a shopping cart. And maybe that's why I'm getting water inside the frame of the car. But just wanted to know what you thought.
Yeah, I think you've got two things possibly happening. Does the air conditioner still work in that van?
Yeah, it works great.
Yeah.
Yep.
When it's humid out and the air conditioner is on, are you still seeing water dripping out from under the car anywhere? Do you ever notice that?
Well, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's not a problem. That's not the issue. It's when the weather gets cold,
right?
There's this humidity in the car.
Yes.
In fact, the only way to get rid of it a lot of times is to turn the air conditioning on and to try to...
Let it evaporate. Yeah. Here's what you've got happening. More than likely, the front heater core is leaking coolant, and that coolant is all the moisture that you can't get out of the vehicle anymore. And or you could also have... In addition to that, the air conditioning drain could be partially or fully plugged, and that's where the sloshing water sound is coming from, or it could be sloshing coolant. But I think you've got a problem with your front heater core now, and that could be causing most all of your trouble now.
So the collisions with the shopping carts are just a coincidental
situation? I don't think the shopping cart could get in there heavy and hard enough to cause any damage other than some dents maybe outside.
You see little drips around the car every once in a while. The water usually shows up under the car when it rains real heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a really heavy rainstorm. It's been doing that for like 5 years.
This doesn't
happen. Open up the back car, the door, the sliding door, and all this water would just come flowing out of it.
This,
I don't think it's the heater core.
This vehicle doesn't have a sunroof, does it?
No.
No, because a lot of those vans did not, but... I think
What are the problems that you have when you bypass a heater core in the back? Because I was told that people have issues with that.
No. If you bypass the rear heater core, it's virtually unnoticed. It's like having a car that didn't have rear heat to begin with. So I'm leaning towards your front heater core and maybe some plugged up drains in the heating air conditioning housing. That's what I think.
All right, Bernadette, thank you very much. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Hey, yeah, thank you, Ray and Gordon. I have a question for you. We have a Honda 2004 helmet, and this morning, when the key was turned, nothing except for I heard a thump, kind of a in the back. I'm not sure what, because electrical was going through there or something, I don't know. But what could that be?
So, is the vehicle failing to start or run, or are you just wondering what that noise could be?
It was failing to start. It made no noise except for that thump in the back.
And it won't start now?
Well, it's starting now.
But it didn't at that moment?
That's right, a couple times.
How long did the thump last? I mean, was it like 2 seconds? 3 seconds?
Maybe. I'm going to say less than that.
Yeah, what you may have heard is the fuel pump being energized momentarily in anticipation of the engine getting ready to run, and the fact that it didn't start, you didn't hear all the cranking sounds from the starter and the engine, and that sound may always be occurring back there, but you never hear it because the car starts. So that's what I think could
so
be.
So alternator at play here?
No, I think
why would it not start then? What between there and the key would not make it start?
Well, that could be other things. That could be, and it's not that likely on your vehicle, but it could be the beginning of a starter issue.
Uh-huh.
And or it could be bad connections, corroded battery terminals. How old is the battery? Has it ever been replaced?
Yeah, it was replaced last year.
Yeah.
But the car has about, almost 200,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
It's a great car. Never broken anything, really.
Yeah. You could be in the early stages of a starter problem.
Okay.
But it's not going to, it's going to have to keep doing it, unfortunately, till it shows up to the point where everybody knows that that's what it needs.
Oh, I see. So this is going to happen. If it happens, it's going to happen for a while, and we don't have to worry about it until we're...
This could be the beginning of a problem, but I don't think I'd do anything yet. I'd see what it does in the next few days or weeks.
So it'll get more and more frequent?
Yeah, and just hopefully it doesn't fail to start at the worst possible location.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
That's all you can do.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Gordon.
You're welcome.
Lynn, thanks a lot for the call. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-348-2551. It is Vox Pop. It is your chance to weigh in and, in this case, ask a question about your car or truck. Mike in Rexford. Mike, you're on.
Yes, hello. I've got a 2000 Saab 9.5 with 80,000 miles on it. And it was my car. Now my son's driving it. And when I was under it a while ago, I noticed that it has a leaky CV boot on the I think it's on the passenger side. You know, the thing on the axle, there's this boot.
Yeah.
And it's kind of wet on the outside. And I have two problems. That's the first one. I'm wondering how big a deal is that? I know that that's the first sign of failure, but do you do anything about it, or you just kind of like let it fail and then replace it?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. When you say wet, are you saying it's kind of greasy or oily looking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there grease starting to fly out of it?
No, not fly out of it, but the outside of the rubber is wet. And yeah. The one on the other side is just dry as a bone.
Okay. So this is the outside joint out towards the wheel of the car.
Right.
Yeah. Because you have those same boots inside, too, on those axles. There's two things to do. If the boot starts to rupture and it just barely starts losing some grease, that means that the joint inside is probably good. And you have an option of replacing just the boot. So the shop would take the axle out of the car and remove the outer joint and then re-grease it and put a new boot on there and put it back in, and you've got your original drive axle with a new boot and new grease in it. And that's usually less costly. Sometimes not. Sometimes replacements are so inexpensive that an axle swap is more economical. So I would talk to your shop and just pose that to them. You know, what do they recommend, rebooting or replacement? The only downside to replacing it is so many of the replacement drive axles now are, shall we say, made overseas.
Ah.
And it's not the Atlantic. And the quality can be very, very poor.
Yeah.
So I'd be a little careful.
Is it always poor or is it just spotty?
Spotty, but real spotty.
Okay.
So you got to be really, really careful what replacement parts are going in, particularly with I've had a lot of trouble with these replacement drive axles.
Okay, well, especially, you know, this being a Saab and the company doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly, yeah, you can still get all those parts still. In fact, we did do a 9.5 drive axle not long ago, so the parts do exist, and they're not any more costly than anything else.
So it's murky. I mean, I could go either way, or I could just drive it and let it fail. It might last a long time.
Well, it might. You're right. You could go maybe in, who knows how long. It might last another year that way, and then you got to replace it anyway. So, you know, there is some consideration to that as well.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the other thing I have is on the same car. My son's been driving. He doesn't pay a lot of attention to it. I noticed when he's making a tight turn and the power steering was making some noises. Long story short, we found out there's a power steering leak. We looked at it, and there were leaks. The mechanic told us there were like several leaks.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got power steering fluid, filled up the reservoir, and it's been several months now, and the reservoir hasn't dropped. I mean, it's fine.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, do we really have to do anything about that? You know, power steering fluid is not that expensive.
Same thing. Some of those leaks are so tiny and take so long for that level to go down to that point that you're right. If, let's say you check that power steering fluid at every oil change, and maybe every oil change it took an ounce or two. It would never get down, it would never make the noise, and you'd think, well, we're just topping it up very, very slightly now and then.
Yeah.
Probably didn't get checked for a long time. And
right.
So I think I would watch that one. I wouldn't go replacing all that stuff. But be careful what you put in that for power steering fluid. You may not, I think the Saabs might take a...
You're right. It's a different one. I looked it up.
Yeah.
I looked it up online, and yes, it's different than everyone else.
Yeah. So make sure you use the right stuff. I think it's a Pentazin product. It's in a green can.
Yep, that's
and,
it. Yep.
Yeah, use that stuff. Don't use anything else.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Bill in Pittsfield, you're next. Bill.
Hi, my name's Bill. I'm near Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Fair enough.
I had a question for you. I have just bought a 2002 F-250 Super Duty Ford a few months ago. Has a nice big 8-foot plow on, only 92,000 miles on it, one owner. In anticipation, I'll use that for a plow truck because I live out where I have about a 600-foot driveway. So, had a exhaust manifold leak when I bought it, and I said, yeah, I'll go ahead and get that taken care of. So I took it into the shop that I always deal with, and he ripped it down and said, big problems. Whoever tried to fix this before drilled into the head in different places, and basically, you know, I could drill it out and put bigger bolts in, but the bottom line is you probably need a new head.
Ooh.
It's a 5.4 liter.
That...
So... You know, I have another set of eyes looking at it. He called it another neighbor mechanic to, just down the road from him to take a look at it and see, because he didn't feel comfortable replacing the head, but this other guy, I guess, does that kind of stuff. Just wanted to get some thoughts.
Yeah, replacing the cylinder head on those engines is no picnic. Years ago, when you didn't have overhead cams and timing chains, taking the cylinder head off was a pretty straightforward, you'd almost call it by today's standards, an enjoyable job. But now you've got overhead cams with chains and tensioners and plastic guides that keep all the chains in place. And you have some variable cam timing devices that are incorporated in the cams and on the front of those. It's gotten very, very complicated. It can be done. Yes, definitely. It does happen. And Ford dealers handle a lot of these because there's other issues that they encounter with those 5.4 liter engines. So definitely, be careful who's going in there and doing that. If somebody has experience in it and they're comfortable with them, that's fine. But it's going to be a pretty big job, I'm afraid.
How costly do you think something like that would be?
I don't know, but it's not going to be any easy task because you're replacing the cylinder head, and there's lots of labor involved, and
right.
could be bad news. But yeah, but that's a common problem with those manifolds, and then getting the drill, when the drill slides off the stud and hits the aluminum, it's awful.
Yikes!
Yeah, there's two heads on those, right? Because it's. From what he said of the V8, there's two heads on them. So
yeah, exactly.
One
yep.
Yeah.
And you might be faced with the exhaust manifold issue on the other side soon too,
Yeah, it sounds like I'm done.
Yeah.
So, boy, what's with these 5.4 liters?
Oh, I don't think we have enough time today.
Okay, and I don't want Gordon to swear, so let's just move on. Bill, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. John and Kanan. John, you're on.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. I have a 57 Willys with 16,000 miles on it. It's been used all that time, driving slowly around a farm. The radiator is not performing well. The car is overheating. I replaced the thermostat. That didn't seem to do very much for it. And the radiator is leaking. So it's currently sitting down at my local garage, and we're trying to figure out what to do with it. Question number one is it better to, would it make more sense to take it out and try to fix it, take it over to a local radiator repair guy and see what he could do? Or number two, given the age of the car, would it be better just to bite the bullet and replace it? And the replacement option, as I understand it, I've looked for the parts on the web. They're not too easy to find, but I found two suppliers. One that supplies a aluminum radiator, and that might be like you mentioned earlier, a part that was made in a foreign country, maybe not on the Atlantic seaboard.
Right.
The other, quite much more expensive, like $200-$300 more expensive, that looks that whose. The material's not defined as to what that thing is made of, but it looks like the original radiator. One is defined as a three-row radiator, the foreign one, And the other, the more expensive one, is defined as a two-row radiator. So the question is, first, repair or replace? And if so, replace with what?
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to keep the car original, I would see if the original can be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to re-core it, more than likely. And the cooling capacity will be just what it was when the car was built, for the most part. And then you know you've got a radiator that's going to fit back in the spot, bolt up, and work.
Okay.
The aluminum aftermarket one of questionable origin may not fit right, and it may be trouble. I don't know. I hate to condemn all that stuff, but it could be. And the other option, the replacement that looks to be an original type replacement, I would certainly look into that one as well. But, you know, if you're not relying on this vehicle, which I don't think you are, you know, if you've got the time, contact some. There's not a lot of radiator repair places around anymore, but they still do exist.
No, there is one nearby me, actually.
Yeah, I would investigate that first. Then you got your original radiator to go back in.
John, thank you very much for the call. We'll take a break here. We're with Gordon Fricke. We hit the home stretch in a moment. It is Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Kent Hicks Construction, West Chesterfield, Massachusetts, specializing in energy-efficient, net-zero passive house home building, deep energy retrofits, and historical restorations. Serving Western Massachusetts, KentHicksConstruction.com. The Cheese Traveler, Delaware Avenue, Albany, New York, a full-service cheese sandwich and specialty shop, now offering tastings, classes, and Friday night cookouts. TheCheeseTraveler.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, presenting Francis Day, celebrating the museum's namesake with music, art making, gallery talks, photo booths, and more. July 19th, 12 p.m. to 7 p.m., 518-580-8080. And Clear Yoga in Rhinebeck, Iyengar Yoga for all ages and abilities. Classes daily, including restorative meditation and weekend workshops. A yoga practice helping to develop strength, flexibility, and peace of mind. ClearYogaRhinebeck.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Here's one via email. Gordon from Chris in Mountainville, New York. My Mini Cooper just passed the 100K mark. She's making a high-pitched, faint whistling sound that reminds me of the time my last car's water pump failed. Is there any way that I can determine that myself? Any other maintenance issues I should look into at this mileage?
Does it say what year the car is, Ray, on that? Is that an
no,
email?
No.
Okay.
Chris does not say just that it's a Mini Cooper, hit 100,000 miles.
Yep, yeah. They're pretty rugged cars. And up to model year 06, the engine was a pretty basic design. They didn't have any variable cam timing. And they lasted a long time. Very good car. The whistling noise could be a lot of different things. I wouldn't just jump at it being a water pump. And what we do at the shop is we determine what noises are with a stethoscope, like a doctor's.
Really?
But there's a, instead of the thing that goes over your heart or on your chest, that pad, there's a pointer. And you just touch different areas of the engine or things moving, and when they get really loud, you think you're onto it, and that's pretty much where the cause of the sound is.
Wow,
so,
I didn't know that.
So you can buy them. You could go to an auto parts store, Harbor Freight, one of those places, and you can buy these stethoscopes and probe around and kind of pinpoint where you think the noise is coming from.
So what else could it be if it's not the water pump?
It could be other pulleys that are turning on the belt side of the engine. Anything that turns with the belt is in question.
Is that indicative of a problem or just a whiny belt?
The way he's describing it, it's probably a component. So you need to poke at the alternator, the water pump, everything that turns to try to isolate it.
Okay.
That's all I could recommend you do.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Angelo and Beacon, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an 09 Honda Civic LX, and I'm having some stability problems on the road, mainly when I'm driving about 65, you know, going down the thruway, something like that. And I find I'm kind of sliding all over the road. At least, you know, the car doesn't really feel stable. It doesn't feel like it's, you know, grounded. I'm just kind of, you know, especially around curves, I feel, you know, so I complained, you know, a couple of times. I got the, had the alignment done a few times, didn't seem to help. And just recently I had the left axle replaced. And I haven't taken it on the, you know, on the highway yet, but I was just wondering what your opinion is about it.
Is it a, did you say it was a Civic?
Yes, it's an 09 Civic LX.
What kind of shape are the tires in?
I think they're pretty decent shape, but that they came with the car. I bought the car in 2011.
How many miles are on the car now?
38,000.
If those are the original tires, they're probably getting to the end of their life for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible that you're... Are you experiencing this in wet weather or any weather?
Any weather.
Yeah. You did the right thing. The alignment is always something that needs to be verified, whether it's really out of whack or not, because rear alignment, rear misalignment, the rear end is very deceiving because, mm-hmm. you know, the steering wheel is still straight and the car goes down the road, but it feels weird. The back end's loose. And Civics did have some issues with rear camber going out of whack on the alignment. And mm-hmm. Honda changed some of the components back there to correct that. But what comes to mind is tire pressure. That's very important.
Yeah, it did help. I did. I found that, I guess, wherever I brought it last, you know, they pumped up the tire pressure to about 42. So I lowered it to about 34.
Yeah, 42 is probably too much for that little car. But I would,
yeah.
you know, I always like to sneak them up a little bit over the recommended pressure. But I think somebody should really get a good look at those tires.
Yeah.
And also the condition of the general suspension, the shock absorbers and things like that, even though you don't have a ton of miles on the car.
Yeah. Well, I guess they did that when I brought it in, and they found that the axle, left axle was bad, and they replaced that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, do you think that's kind of early to have an axle replaced on an 09 car?
Was it because the CV boot was ruptured and leaking grease out all over the place?
No. It was knocking. There was some rattling or something in the that's why I brought it in. I heard some rattling. So
yeah, it is a little early for something like that, unless that boot got ruptured and then the grease came out and debris and salt and junk got in there.
Yeah.
You know.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Well, Angelo, thanks a lot. You know, we have the worst van in the world. It's 2005. I won't say the name, but there were times we'd be driving on the highway, dry weather, and we'd feel like we're drifting. And it was tire pressure.
Yeah.
The tires weren't that many miles on them,
yeah.
but the tire pressure was poor in a couple of the tires, and it gives you a very disconcerting feeling.
It's one of the most overlooked maintenances on the road today are tire condition and pressure. And I was just talking to a buddy of mine the other day. We went on a motorcycle ride, and he said, gee, I wonder if I should be doing anything with this bike. I haven't really done any maintenance. And I said, one of the most important things are your tires, and on a motorcycle, the pressures have an unbelievable effect on how the bike handles. If you get your bike out in the spring and you don't bring the pressures up there at, let's say, 25 pounds,
yeah.
the bike feels horrible and sloppy. You bring them up to spec, it's a new machine.
Yeah.
And cars and pickups or anything on the road, same thing. Tire pressures are very, very critical.
It's always a good idea to check that, especially before a long road trip. Christine in Coxsackie. Christine, you're on.
Hi, I have a 2007 Honda Accord, and she's got a lot of miles, almost 200, about 190-something thousand, actually. And when we ride on the thruway, I do a lot of highway driving, it's very loud, like rumbly. It has no tires, and, I mean, so loud that you can put the radio on really high, and it's still the body itself, like the floor, it's just very loud. And I'm wondering if you have any idea what you think it might be or what it sounds like. And I never had a car with so many miles,
mm-hmm.
and being that it's a 2007, I don't know, do things go wrong with... It just reminds me like the Flintstones, like it's going to just drop out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That's what I keep thinking when I'm riding it.
Wow.
So how long ago did you get new tires?
We thought that would be the problem. So we had the new tires put on, and it's still unchanged.
Yeah. Has anybody gone in for a ride with you, any mechanic, for a test drive? To listen to that sound?
No. When I bring it up, it's, you know, doesn't seem like they see anything wrong with it, but I know personally it's not the same.
Yeah. What you should do is take a mechanic or you know, your service advisor or whoever repairs your car and just say, can you take a minute and go for a ride and tell me what this noise is? And if I had to guess, I'd say it's probably a wheel bearing. Wheel bearings start to make grumbling, kind of whirring, roaring sounds.
Yeah.
And the noise increases with your speed and decreases with your speed. And sometimes that noise changes when you bear through turns at highway speed. Sometimes the noise gets louder. Sometimes it gets quieter. If I had to guess, with that mileage, you very likely have a wheel bearing on its way out.
How many miles?
Oh, she said almost 200,000.
Wow.
Yeah, almost 200,000. So just about, I thought 180, but I'm like, no, wait, it's turning 190-something.
Yeah.
You know, and I put mileage on pretty quick.
Yeah, take somebody with you for a ride, because if you do have a wheel bearing going, you don't want that to fail at 65 miles an hour.
Have it
seize up
on you.
Can I ask you the cost? What is wheel bearings? What is the cost that I have to replace that?
It varies greatly, because some cars, the wheel bearings require pressing to get them in and out, and there's more labor. Others, they bolt in. But you could be looking at $200 to $250 a wheel, and that's just a that's just a rough idea. But
sure, I gotta say, I've never put a dime mechanically into her. I call her her.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Been a great car.
Well, get it checked out and keep driving it.
Thanks,
yeah,
Christine.
Hey, great. Thank you. Thanks for being here. It's pretty cool. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Rich in Albany. Hi, Rich. You're on.
Yeah, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2008 Mercedes E350. And it's got about 60,000 miles on it. Great car, great condition. However, I've noticed with the recent rainstorm, I park it on our driveway, which is about a 30 or 40 degree incline. But I come out and get in the car to go to work in the morning after, say, a rainstorm or something. Water leaks into the cabin down around your feet, and it does it on both sides of the car.
Yep. That's believe it or not, that's not that uncommon, and there's two major sources for that to happen. And one of them is, they're called the cowl drains, and that's the area between the hood and the firewall of the car where the air gets drawn in for your heating and air conditioning system. And in addition to the air going in there, so does all the rainwater. So it has to have a way to get out. And little twigs and leaves and pollen and junk gets in there, plugs up those drains. And if they're running too slowly or plugged in heavy, heavy downpours like we've had about, I don't know, every day for the last 2 weeks, those drains can't handle it, and the water goes in through your heating system and lands on the floor of the car. The other thing is the sunroof drains. Does the car must have a sunroof. Is that right, Rich?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The sunroof, when the panel is open, if you look with a flashlight, you'll see little, in each corner there's going to be a hole, and that's connected to a drain hose that lets that water run out through the pillars of the car, the A-pillar, which is the front one next to the windshield, and then it'll drain the rear out. If those drains plug up from the same debris, that sunroof will plug up, fill up with water, and it'll trickle down those pillars and land on the floor. Mm. So it's going to be one of those two things for the most part.
Is there a way to clean out the cowl then?
Yeah. If you can, some cars, there's like plastic grill work that has to be removed so you can get in there and clean them. Other cars, there's not, and you can look down in there with a flashlight, and you'll see all the twigs and sticks and junk, and get all you can out with your hands, and then take a garden hose and blast those things through, and make sure they pass a lot of water. It'll you know, the water will run right out on right on the ground under the car, and that's what it's supposed to do.
Okay,
great, thanks. We appreciate the call, Rich. Let's go over to Glenn in Taunton, Mass. Glenn, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi. Probably about 4 months ago, I bought a 2010 Toyota Corolla, and it started making this noise when you hit the gas. It's like the fan was hitting something. But we brought it to the service station. And they said they couldn't find it because it only happens once in a while. So now what's happening is when we're driving, it'll hit and it'll sound like the fan's hitting. So I stopped, I looked at the car, the fan wasn't hitting nothing, nothing's rattling on it, but there's this very fast tick. So when you hit the gas, it goes fast, and when you take your foot off the gas, slows down, but it doesn't happen all the time. It happens once in a great while. So I didn't know. It sounded like it was coming from my motor.
Okay.
So you don't have to be even moving to hear this sound. Is that correct? Just the engine has to be running?
Correct.
And if you speed the engine up, that ticking increases with the engine speed.
That's correct. It sounds like, you know, how you take a car and you put it in a fan?
Yep.
And it makes that noise? Well, that's what it sounds like.
If you had the hood, if you were to raise the hood of the car and have it running and you're hearing that noise, does it sound like it's really high up near the top of the engine?
Yes.
Yep. Just for kicks, have you checked the oil level recently?
Yeah, we get oil levels every 3 months. We get oil change. We just had one done.
What you need to do is now that it's doing it more often, get somebody's ears under the hood, and it's possible that you've got a valve train related noise from the top of the engine. That's why I asked you if the noise seemed to be coming from way up high. It could be a valve train noise, a valve lifter. Something along those lines.
Something to worry about or just an annoyance?
No, it probably is something to worry about if it's that loud and that constant now.
Okay.
And a lot of times it's if you inadvertently get really low on oil, and a lot of people don't check their oil anymore,
yeah.
And all of a sudden you're 3 quarts low and the upper end of the engine's starving, and that's what the noise is.
Yep.
So that's what I would get it checked.
Glenn, thank you very much. We go to Mary in Gloversville. Hi, Mary, you're on.
Hi, I have a 2005 Jeep Laredo 4x4 with 100,000 miles on it. When I drive it at a low acceleration, like you're going slow but you need to accelerate, but accelerate slowly, I get this jerk or shudder or shimmy or tug feeling. All of those describe the thing right. My mechanic couldn't find nothing, couldn't find anything, and half my family thinks I'm crazy because it kind of comes and goes. Do you have any ideas?
So it's light acceleration, but what speeds?
Yes.
Are you at 50 miles an hour and you're just trying to go a little faster?
No, like you had to slow down because someone was making a left in front of you, but now you can go again, but you're only in like a 40-mile-an-hour zone.
But you're really light on the throttle, but you're just trying to accelerate?
Right.
But
if you drive it a little harder, like if I drive it harder all the time because I'm a slow driver, it doesn't do it.
Yeah. There's two possibilities. Is the check engine light on?
No code, nothing.
Okay, because the first thing that needs to be checked is if there's any history of any misfires. And the misfiring, you know, could be from a variety of reasons. Spark plug, ignition system, fuel injector, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing could be you could be getting a shutter from the torque converter of the transmission when it's trying to go into what's called lockup mode.
Okay.
And if it's not successfully locking up, it will chatter. And that is a hard thing to pinpoint because there was a time where when these transmissions started having these lockup devices, the transmission guys were saying, I don't think it's the transmission, I think it's the engine. The engine guys were saying, I don't think it's the engine, I think it's the transmission. And
right.
So we'll always look for misfires. So somebody's going to have to check that thing and go out on it in with a scan tool and see if there's any misfiring occurring and or get a feel for the problem. And it could be, and I don't want to scare you, but it could be transmission related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we replaced the ECM on it about a year ago, but this comes and goes, and that's disappointing to hear. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's what it is, but somebody needs to try to pinpoint it and determine if that's the case.
Yeah, my mechanic had no luck. Okay.
Well, good luck, Mary. We appreciate it. So you said, as we were talking before the show, you're seeing a lot of transmission issues now.
Well, we just happen to have, you know, if have had a few failing here recently. And, again, it's higher mileage vehicles getting used like crazy. And automatic transmissions have gotten way more complicated. There's electronics in there completely now. And automatics, like every other piece of machinery, eventually fail.
Yeah.
And when they do, can be, you know, big time.
Does that mean bye-bye car or?
Depends how old the vehicle is and what your threshold is of putting money into it. You know, there's always, you can gamble on a used one.
Yeah. Well, Gordon, great as always to have you here. Thanks to everybody who called in. Support comes from Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. And Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, celebrating 24 years, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. JoyellesJewelers.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Phones answered by Mike Allinger, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. Thanks again to Gordon Fricke. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's a Food Friday. Stay tuned now for a news update.